Hello, today is Thursday, August 2nd, 2018. I'm Joe Schmidt with TC2, and this is Staying Connected. Today's podcast is part of our Staying Connected podcast series titled Staying Ahead of the Demand for Network Cost Savings. In this podcast series, we're covering a range of topics and providing strategies to help enterprises achieve continuous network cost improvement and deliver world-class network infrastructure. I'm joined today by Ben Fox, one of TC2's managing directors, and Andrew Brown, who is the managing partner of LV3 and the chairman of TC2. We are going to talk about strategies and best practices for when you are in a sole source negotiation. Okay, Ben, you recently had an article published in No Jitter on this very topic, so why don't you introduce it for us?
Certainly, Joe. Yeah, so for everybody who knows TC2 and LV3, of course, it's no surprise to hear that we always advise companies that competitive procurements deliver the best negotiated outcome. We know that's true. We've seen it so many times. A well-executed, a fully competitive procurement always beats the alternative. But at the same time, we live in the real world, of course, and we're always working with companies who face the reality that a fully competitive procurement is not practical or not possible at that particular moment in time. So good examples are perhaps you're doing a midterm contract renegotiation. You might be negotiating for specific products for which there is no real alternative, and dealing with OEMs such as Cisco is a classic example of that. Or you may simply be adding new services to an existing contract, so you simply can't go to some other supplier to provide those. They're all pretty common situations in which companies find themselves in a sole source supplier negotiation situation. So, which is simply stated, a negotiation that only involves one supplier and there's no competitive pressure from alternative vendors. And this happens all the time, of course, and we routinely help our clients with these types of negotiations.
Yeah, we see that a lot in the situations that you just described, but there are still many things that you can do if you don't have competitive pressure with multiple providers, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And first, I think it's really important to realize that even though it's a sole source procurement, it's still a negotiation. Shouldn't make the mistake of simply accepting your first offer and not negotiating. And of course, there are many ways you can improve your negotiating position with a supplier, even if there aren't other suppliers around to exert any competitive pressure. The most significant driver for a good deal versus a not so good one is how well, or perhaps how poorly, the customer uses the tools and the leverage to prepare and conduct a sole source negotiation. And we regularly see a really very large gap between the pricing and terms the same supplier offers for almost the exact same service and products to different customers. And that very large gap is simply a result of how well those customers conduct their sole source negotiations. There's a huge amount of benefit to be had from a well-executed sole source negotiation.
So, you know, it's definitely about working with what you have given your particular situation. So, Andrew, what are some of the strategies that help maximize negotiating leverage in a sole source negotiation?
Well, first, it's important not to overlook some of the basics. Ben just talked about identifying sources of leverage for your negotiation. And one really important example that you should start with is making sure you understand your company's total relationship with the supplier. Companies often have these multifaceted relationships with large IT suppliers, and those relationships cross over multiple stakeholders within the organization. Different services are often financed across different budgets, and they may be used by different business groups in your company. Those groups may not have full visibility to what the others are buying. It gets very complicated. Oftentimes, different services are even provided under different contracts, so a single company may have multiple contracts with one supplier and not even know it without checking first. So having a full understanding of the total spend and portfolio of services that the supplier provides to your company will definitely help you identify pockets of negotiation leverage that you can use. And of course, know that the supplier is going to be doing the exact same analysis of its relationship with you to maximize its leverage with you.
Yeah, you know, that's right. Why is it that suppliers always seem to know exactly how much their companies pay to their customers when the supplier is purchasing stuff from your company?
Well, they do. It's smart business, and if you can't beat them at that game, at least follow their lead and do it to them to level the playing field a little bit. So the other point is that you really have to know your current contract position for the services that you're buying or things that you're buying from the supplier right now. What are the commitments already in place for the services you're negotiating to purchase? How close are you to meeting those commitments? When does your current deal expire, and what are your options when it does? Do you have a contract renewal right or a transition period? All of these terms are going to directly affect your negotiation leverage for the sole source negotiation. And whatever the terms are, whether good or bad, you're better off for the negotiation if you know them in detail, because your supplier almost certainly will.
Let me just jump in there and make a follow-on point to that list from Andrew. The other best practice is to determine at the start of the negotiation the basis upon which you, the customer, are prepared to do business with the supplier. But what I mean is answering some basic questions, such as, what is the length of contract term or extension that you're willing to enter into for this sole source negotiation? What kind of commitments, if any, would you accept? You know, keeping in mind any commitments you already have that you've identified in the existing contract. And what key financial terms do you expect? For instance, replenishing or maintaining existing credits and one-time charges that you might expect to be waived. So identifying those kind of key terms and setting them out at the start of the negotiation ensures that those things are raised early in the negotiation and helps you determine whether or not they're controversial to the supplier or an issue or not. And it also really helps by providing a framework to focus on, to focus both you and the supplier, so you only have a manageable number of issues to resolve, rather than having all sorts of deal issues. The supplier doesn't even know what term extension you want, for instance, so it has to, you know, give you different variables, different permutations that needlessly lengthen the negotiation.
Yeah, and to that point, it really is important to actually have a strategy and to develop a structure for the negotiation. Don't just jump in and try to negotiate this one-off service off the cuff. If you develop a negotiation strategy that accounts for the preparation that we're talking about and just talked about, you're much more likely to be able to win some of the items that you identify. It's also really important as part of that to maintain a good record of the communications. Sole source negotiations tend to be less formal than competitive sourcing processes. So you can easily fall into this trap of inadequately documenting the negotiation back and forth, and that inevitably leads to a lot of avoidable misunderstandings and delays down the road. Make sure the supplier submits its proposal in writing, and make them include a real proposal that has unit pricing, the commercial terms, legal terms, that kind of stuff. You got to get them to turn that original PowerPoint deck generated by their sales or marketing department that they presented to you at that first meeting with you, and they have to make it into an actual written proposal. Then you got to make sure you provide your proposal feedback in writing and follow up your discussions you have with a written record of anything the vendor verbally offers or gets clarified, so that you know exactly where the negotiation stands from the puts and takes that occur during the course of the negotiation.
Thanks, guys. Those are some great points. So, Ben, can you share some specific sole source negotiation strategies that we have found to be most successful?
Absolutely. So strategies that leverage any wider relationship outside the specific services for which you're negotiating can be very effective. Strategies that present negotiation as kind of a platform for future revenue growth for the supplier can also be effective. But I think it's really important as well to present and convey to the supplier the implications of them providing you with an unsatisfactory offer. So a supplier that's kind of made to understand the long-term implications of an inadequate offer. So, for example, the fact that it will damage your relationship with them, and it will damage their potential to obtain future business from future growths, that can actually generate a more positive focus on the current negotiation. I think all suppliers know that when a customer becomes kind of aggrieved over a contract extension negotiation or a negotiation for new services, and where the customer feels that negotiation hasn't done well or the supplier hasn't done right by them, such customers are far more likely to use a competitive procurement in the future and also move to alternative vendors. So supplier sales teams are motivated inherently to keep their customers happy. So by leveraging that desire to keep the customer happy, you can actually obtain a better negotiation outcome. I think ultimately what you need to do is demonstrate to the supplier that providing a competitive proposal will result in a win-win, whereas an uncompetitive proposal will simply lead to negative consequences for the supplier's relationship and business in the future with your company. And effectively, how good a job you do conveying that to the supplier has a really material effect on the outcome of the negotiation.
So as you guys know, we provide our clients with benchmarking, and clearly having current market benchmarking intelligence, it's invaluable in a sole sourcing negotiation.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, negotiating pricing and terms with a supplier is almost impossible if you don't know what a good deal looks like. So in sole source negotiations, especially, suppliers typically their opening offer is priced considerably higher than it would be if it was a competitive situation. So even simply targeting to negotiate a certain percentage reduction from the opening offer isn't likely to get you a competitive price. Indeed, most of the time suppliers expect that to happen and they'll price that into a bloated opening offer. But also you can't make the opposite mistake, which is to request a price or terms that are so unrealistically aggressive, so far below the market, that that simply, that kind of overreach, that undermines your credibility in the negotiation. The supplier immediately realizes that you unfortunately don't know much about the market for the services you're sourcing, and those unrealistic demands simply embolden the supplier to withhold and deny concessions. So getting market intelligence benchmark data in advance of your negotiation is invaluable. And of course, there's a variety of sources for that, industry reports, direction, you know, you can look at other relationships that you may have with peer companies and what they can tell you, internal benchmarks from other suppliers, and even analysis from market research firms. But for big enterprises that tend to have complex, multifaceted supplier relationships, that makes benchmarking really complicated. Most of those sources are of little value. What you really need is a bespoke benchmark analysis of the kind that TC2 provides that leverages real data, which is applicable to similarly sized enterprises. And that's what provides the most effective and accurate market intelligence for your negotiation. I think it's also good to note that the suppliers, in general, react positively to external benchmarking input. They realize, too, that it helps expedite the negotiation. They also realize that a good advisor will help manage the customer's expectations in line with the market, you know, making sure that negotiation doesn't go to needless cycles, trying to focus on customer requests that are just unfulfillable. But it's also true, of course, and we see this every now and then, that suppliers try to undermine the benchmarking input. That's part of the negotiation style that they have. And sometimes they even try to exclude the advisor from the negotiation. But if that happens, I think you've just got to be smart about what the supplier is saying. The only reason they're trying to exclude your advisor is because they know that customers that engage such external support get a significant advantage versus those who don't.
So, Andrew, what about contract terms? Is that something that comes up?
You asked that question of the lawyer, of course. Yeah, contract terms are actually a really important part of this. Suppliers love to prey on customers willing to sacrifice terms in their agreements that protect long-term negotiation leverage and can deliver future pricing improvements in exchange for these short-term cost reductions. They've been doing that forever. So, for example, a simple amendment for new pricing on a new service, it often tries to remove a great rate review provision that you might already have, or it'll extend your contract term, something that wasn't discussed. Can impose these large or inflexible commitments or subcommitments. And sometimes this stuff is so buried in not so clear contract language, it can be overlooked if you're just focused on pricing issues. It'll say something like delete section 3.4 of your agreement. So if the supplier's going to the trouble of taking something out of your existing agreement, it's probably something really good for you in the first place. And you'll know it's good when they give some nonsensical answer about why it has to come out. Things like, well, we've updated our contract forms to better reflect the market, or we've eliminated provisions to provide simpler deals for our customers. So make sure you avoid that. And one of the ways to do that is to get those contract documents relatively early in the negotiation. I'm not saying to lawyer up after the first meeting and start exchanging red lines before you've talked about pricing or basic terms, but contract documents reveal the full scope of the deal, and they ultimately have to be signed, so don't just wait until the last week of your negotiation to get them. That doesn't end well. Guess how much time a supplier usually spends customizing their contract forms to include the promises they've made and to capture all the terms you've discussed. It's about zero. So to make sure you get everything that you've negotiated and that you set as your baselines going in, start that process relatively early and you'll be better off including your deal on time.
Okay. Thank you, Andrew. And thank you, Ben. So I think to summarize today's podcast, you guys have really helped make it clear that the varying levels of competitive leverage that customers have in any individual negotiation has a great deal of influence on pricing levels achieved in their negotiation. But the strategies and tools used in the negotiation are equally important in driving the best possible deal. So I encourage you, our listeners, to take a look at the article that Ben published in No Jitter for even more advice on best practices for sole source negotiation. The article is also available on TC2's and LB3's website. For our next podcast in the Staying Connected podcast series, I'm joined by my TC2 colleagues, Jack Deal and Larry York, who will be talking with me about best-in-class business terms to help enterprises keep ahead of the pricing curve. So please look out for messages from us providing links to the latest podcasts, or simply go to our website. And if you, the listening audience, would like to learn more about best practices for ICT procurements, or if you'd like to discuss other ICT needs with Ben, Andrew, me, or any of our LB3 and TC2 colleagues, please give us a call or shoot us an email. And you can also stay current by checking out our website or follow us on LinkedIn.